Hey, we're concluding this series, How to Make a Monster Listen. And we've recognized that the monster is not really money. The monster is at times our mismanagement of money. And it turns into a stressful situation and has the ability to really put pressure on our marriages that are unneeded and unwanted, put pressure on our family, put pressure on us. Maybe you're the breadwinner, it pushes pressure on you. And then it just kind of multiplies and mounts into debt. And it just brings unwanted stresses into our relationships and into our life. And God has so much to say about money. It's actually one of the subjects that he says the most about because he knows how it can overrule our lives, this thing called finances, and even overrule our family and faith and friendships. And so God says, hey, let's put money in its place and let's understand it appropriately. And he has all these teachings on money, God does, and they're found in the scriptures. But here's what they kind of condense down to, a real simple idea of fundamentals. And fundamentals are important. Vince Lombardi, who was one of the most championship-winning coaches for the Green Bay Packers in the 60s, every single summer camp session he'd have before the season, he'd hold up the football and he'd say, gentlemen, this is a football. Now listen, they knew what a football was. They made their living playing football. Whether it was a rookie or a veteran, they all knew what a football was. But it was Lombardi's way of saying, let's get back to the basics. Let's get back to the foundational aspects of football. And while there's so many things built upon those foundations, let's get these basic things right. Because if we can get the basics right, we can win some championships. How about that as it relates to finances? Let's get back to the basics. Let's get back to some financial fundamentals, because I think for a lot of us, we've made the water muddy and we can't see clearly now because of all the way in which we've used money, maybe mismanaged it or misapplied it. Let's get back to what God has to say to us about it. And here's a pathway that God provides. If you kind of summarize all the scriptures up about how to find financial freedom and to live like you've always wanted to live and give like you've always wanted to give, it looks like this. Live within your means, spend less than you earn, give generously, and save consistently. Now look, I know. Those four principles seem so easy, but they're so difficult to live out because we're in a materialistic world. The world actually runs on money. And we know that there's times when we don't live on our means, and we spend more than we have, and we don't give consistently, and maybe we don't save consistently as well. We're just not living out those principles. And we've been talking about how to make that monster listen. And the monster is us. And a couple weeks ago, we had this brief teaching from this parable that I want to study in depth today in Matthew chapter 25. It's page 806 in the Bible in the chair rack in front of you. And that parable is called the parable of the gold bags. It used to be called the parable of the talents, and the talents is a unit of measurement that was once used. And so basically it's about three guys who get a bunch of money from a master, and they're told to use it in a way that will honor him best. And this parable, and what a parable is, it's an earthly story that has a heavenly meaning. And so as Jesus tells us this story, he's saying, this is what it's like with God and you all. And we've already set the foundation a couple weeks ago that God is the master in this story. We are the servants, and the bags of gold or the resources or however you want to bring it out to maybe money or whatever it might be is not ours. It's really God's, and he's entrusted it to our care to be faithful managers. We titled it like this last time, that we're God's CFO. We're God's chief financial officers. And he's entrusted us with this. You feel very proud that God says, I trust you with money. And now here's the story in context, Matthew 25, starting in verse 15. To one, he gave five bags of gold. To another, he gave two bags. And to another, one bag, each according to his ability. And then he went on his journey. Now, if you were to kind of like average that out financially about what a tenant of gold would be today, it'd be about $30,000 a bag. But you can't really relate it to today's currency or today's wealth because 2,000 years ago, gold was more scarce. And so I just read last week that more than likely what these guys were given were tens of millions of dollars apiece. That's not small potatoes. And so what we're discovering here is that the master was generous with his entrustment to these three different servants. But what we're also discovering is that the wealth was distributed unequally. Did you catch that? Like he gave one guy five, another guy two, another guy one. And if you were the master in the story, you probably wouldn't have done that. You probably would have done some kind of like social justice, equality kind of thing. And you would have said, look, there's three of you, there's eight bags of gold, everyone's getting two and two-thirds bags of gold. And you would have made it equal. But that's not how our God works. And though you may not like it, and though I may not like it, this is a parable. It's how God is working in heaven as it relates to us here on earth. And God knows that we are all equally important. We are all equally loved by Him. We are shown all the equal grace and mercy, but we are not all created alike, are we? I mean, we're not created alike. Some of us have different attitudes and attributes and aptitudes as it relates to money. And so God knows this about us. And that's why the wealth was distributed unequally in this parable to the servants. It's because they had different attitudes and aptitudes towards money. And you may have wondered why it is that you don't have more than you really think you should. I'm telling you, God looks at us and He recognizes what we're able to do. And just as the statement says, they were given according to their ability. Friends, you may not like it, I may not like it, and though we may not understand it completely, God distributes us His wealth according to our ability. I don't like that, do you? That doesn't sit well with me, but that's the truth of the Scriptures. And I can understand this as someone who gives, but it's so hard to understand for someone who receives. Like, I get this as a parent. I get this as a parent. I got 5 boys. They all handle their money differently. I got some that know how to save, some know how to spend. I got some that don't know how to care. I got one that would probably give him 100 bucks, he'd eat it. They're all different in their attitude and attitude and aptitudes of money. They're going to do with it differently. So let's just say that I fall into this idea that everybody should be equal in their ability, and I kind of lie to myself in this dream world that if we all had the same starting line of 100 bucks, we'd all do the same thing with it. Not true. I'd have one kid come back to me with 500 bucks. I got another kid come back to me with 5 bucks. I got another kid say, I don't even know where it's at. And I've got another say, you can get it later as it gets in the toilet. You know, I don't know where they're going to do with it, but I know this, they're not all going to do the same thing with it. Just like you wouldn't do the same thing if you were all distributed the same amount of money in kind of some socialism idea or test, you would do differently with the money because we all have different attitudes and we all have different aptitudes as it relates to money. And some of you are like, that is so unfair. Our God is so unfair and this world is so unfair. And if you really had financial equality, how would you spend the money? What would you do with it? Like, let's just say, I'll say we start at $100,000, everybody in the world. My guess is you would do the same thing in practice as it relates to managing your money as you're doing right now with the money that you're earning through a salary or hourly employment. And that's why when it comes to my will, which is not a lot, my wife and I have already decided that it will be to the kid, that the lion's share will go to the kid that has the greatest attitude and aptitude in being rich towards God and generous towards others. You're like, that's not fair. You got 5 boys, it should go 5 ways, equal parts. You do it your way, and I'll do it God's way. Because God has, is, and always will distribute blessings according to ability. And I may not get it, I may not like it, but that's the truth. And that's why it's so silly to get hung up on your net worth being your self-worth. That's why it's so silly to look to your neighbor and say, I wish I had, and become envious and jealous. That's why it's so silly for us to get caught up in our status of our bank account being the status of our life. And that's why Jesus so often talked about, don't worry about this stuff, because it means little in the grand scheme of things. You just manage what you have well, whether it's 5 bags or 2 bags or 1 bag, you manage and be responsible for what you have. Quit looking across the street and saying, what does my neighbor have if I got to keep up with that guy? I heard one guy say to his financial broker, how can I ever get out of debt when my neighbor keeps buying things I can't afford? Maybe you feel like that at times. And that's why the Bible says it just plain and simple. Don't compare yourself with others. Just think how that steals the joy from your life when you compare yourself to other people. It just robs the blessings in your life. It robs the joy in your life, especially when you do it on a financial level. Don't compare yourself with others. Just look at your own work and see if you've done anything to be proud of. A lot of things to be proud of in your life. You've broken some financial strongholds that have been upon your family too long. You're the first one to graduate college. You're the first one to earn a true good salary. You're the first one to get health insurance. Who knows what it is? You have a lot to be proud of. And quit looking to the rest of the world to compare yourself by and look at some of the accomplishments that God has put in your path that you have achieved. And you must each accept the responsibilities that are yours. Like, it doesn't matter, five bags, two bags, one bag. Let's just accept the responsibility. God has entrusted me with something, and I will take care of that something. And I know what you're saying, but we're not all on a level playing field. No, we're not. But we'll never be. So you can scream and you can dream all about how we can be on a level playing field. Friend, we will never, ever, ever, ever get there, regardless if we're given some kind of socialized money. There will always be poor, there will always be rich. Jesus said the poor will always be among you. Why? Because our attitude and aptitude towards money. Just like my kids have different IQs and temperaments, so do we all. And one thing we need to reconsider as it relates to this teaching is, if you're upset that God hasn't entrusted you with more, if you are upset that you're not a five-bag gold guy, if you're upset by that God's looked at your abilities and you're wondering why you don't have more because you got the skills to pay the bills, you need to consider for a moment the teachings that Jesus has towards those who are rich and how Jesus, every single time talks about money, says they are at a spiritual disadvantage. You heard that right. That those who are rich are at a spiritual disadvantage. So the next time you're dreaming about the lottery, or the next time you're saying, my quest is to rise up the ladder of this company to get more money, you're really requesting for yourself to be at a spiritual disadvantage. Listen to this teaching, the teaching of Jesus, that their stresses and temptations come allotted with wealth. Jesus said in Matthew 19, I tell you the truth, it's very hard for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. You know why that is? Because when there is wealth, and it's an abundance of wealth, there is the temptation to not rely on God for your daily needs, but to rely on your pocketbook and rely on your instincts and to rely on your investments and to rely on your wealth. When there is wealth, monetary wealth, you can be so busy managing the wealth and enjoying the wealth that you forget time with God. Because the temptation can be there when great wealth, that you forget about the blessings of God because now you're a self-made man or self-made woman and you did all this and it's for you. And you can lose the attribute of being generous towards others and rich towards God because now you're miserly because it's yours and you did this for yourself. And while the five bag of gold guy had more, does not equate that he was more loved by the master. It was according to his ability. He wasn't more loved. He was actually had more responsibility. He actually had more temptation. He actually had a disadvantage in his pursuit of righteousness because of all of his riches. And the guy who was given five bags of gold wasn't superior. He wasn't better. Actually, it just increased the expectations that the master had of him. And may I just say, to those who are rich, five bag of gold people, God has a huge expectation on you, on how you manage his resources. Verse 16. The man who had received five bags of gold went at once, and what did he do? What did he do? He put his money to work and gained five bags more. What an awesome phrase. Did he go to work more? No. Did he put in more time? No. Did he learn a new skill? No. What did he do? He put his money to work. What's that called? That's called an investment. He made some kind of investment. I think everyone knows that to be successful, there's going to be a ton of hard work. There's going to be a sweat of your brow, but there's also going to be some wisdom and some strategy. There's some smarts. Once he put his money to work. Here's a lesson I learned as a kid. Wealth isn't built by accumulated. Wealth isn't built or accumulated just by hard work. Like, you're like, that doesn't seem right. Like, it's hard work, right, that gets us money. No. It gets us some money. But at some point, you've got to be wise with an investment and say, I'm going to use this hard worked money and I'm going to invest with it and let that money start to go to work for me. And you've got to save and you've got to invest and you've got to work hard and you've got to build some wealth. You who are all saving for retirement, you know this. You who are living off of some retirement because you made some good investments, You know how this works. Take advantage of the pension plans or the retirement plans or the 401k or the matching percentage of your employer and put some money to work. Don't spend every dime you got. Make some wise investments. Learn how to save, because living paycheck to paycheck won't get you to the place where you want to one day live. It's not going to get you there. And you're working your fingers to the bone, but you're not putting your money to work. I've got, and I tell you this not out of arrogancy. I tell you this out of help. How over time an investment can pay off. For each of my kids, we have a 529 plan. A lot of you know what that is. It's a college plan. And every single month, my wife and I set a small amount of money. I mean, it's hardly anything. But we've been doing that every single month since they've been alive. And it's now accumulated because it's been working for us that when my kids go to school, we won't have to pay a dime for school. And they won't have to pay a dime for school. What a gift. But guess what? I know what will happen. I've got a 16-year-old. In 2 years, they're going to go to school. They're going to want to go to some great school, you know? And if I didn't have that set up, they'd come to me and say, Dad, I need X amount of tens of thousands of dollars. I don't have that. And if they were just to kind of come to me without me saving or have some kind of discernment early on, I wouldn't have it and they wouldn't have it. And both of us would be in debt because of it. But because of a little bit of wisdom put into place and a little bit of money put into the right place, it's built over time and can be a great blessing to them and be a great blessing to me. And some of you know that as it relates to retirement. You're given something that the government's given to you, and it's, you know, $1,500 a month, $2,000 a month. And right now for you and your family, you can't live off that. And so you've got some retirement, and you're thanking God because of the discernment you had a decade ago, 40 decades ago, or 4 decades ago, rather, where you put in some money over time, and it's built wealth. And let me say to some of you young people who are earning money for the first time, you got a job and you're killing it. You're able to like get out of your parents' house now and, you know, 30 grand a year or whatever it is that you're making. Can I tell you some good investment advice? Let me just briefly. Learn to live on less. Honor God with 10%. Honor God with 10%. Set that aside. That's your first fruits. God, this is for you. And take 15% more of that and you put it towards a good investment of some kind that's going to have some maturity over the course of decades that you can one day retire off of. That's 25%. I know it's 25% of your salary. I get that. And right now it might seem a lot, but if you start that from the very beginning, you will never miss that by living off of 75% of what you've made. Story goes on, continues in verse 17 and 18. It says, so the one with 2 bags of gold, he gained 2 more. He did the same thing. He was good with his investments. He put his money to work. But the man who had received 1 bag, what did he do? He went off, he dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. You know what that word hid is in the Greek language? This is great. That word hid in the Greek language is the word crypto. Got some cryptocurrency? Hid it. Government, you're not going to find it. Shoot, he's never going to find it again. The way cryptocurrency is up and down right now. What he's really saying is he made a bad investment, threw it away, put it in a hole, put it in the trash. Hey guys, this is one of those rare times when Jesus tells a story that the rich come out as the hero. How often is that? That's never. It's always the poor that comes out as the hero. It's always the rich person being scolded and saying, sell what you got, give to the poor, because it's been a hindrance to your faith and a hindrance to your family and a hindrance to your friend. So just get rid of it. This is what is one instance where he looks at the 5 bag of gold guy and the 2 bag of gold guy and says, good job. But the man with the 1 bag of gold, I'll tell you this, he's not in poverty. So this is not like a story between rich and poor. This is a story of resource. This is a story of what God has blessed us with. This is a story that has to remain in perspective. And you, as a listener, have to keep your life in perspective. Because the guy with 5 bags of gold, while he had tens of millions, the guy with 1 bag of gold had millions. That's nothing to scoff at. And I think sometimes we just forget how rich we really are. I read this article recently. It's called Income in Perspective. It stated, America's poor are among the world's wealthiest. Now catch these numbers for a moment. If you make more than $10,000 a year as a household, which I think if you were on some government assistance, you could make $26,000 a year. But if you were to say, just make $10,000 a year as a household, you are richer than 7 billion people in this world. You got that in perspective yet? Because the majority, our median income in Davies County is $43,000. If you're making $50,000 a year as a home total income, you are wealthier than 99% of the world's population. You are the 1% in this world. And if you were to average, though it's really hard to average what the world would make totally, collectively, what the base salary is amongst the world's population, it comes down to around $2 a day. You're doing a lot better than that, aren't you? So there's 195 countries. The United States is always in the top five of earners per salary per citizen. So basically, if Jesus were to tell this parable in 190 countries, every single person in those countries would look to you and say, you're the five bag of gold guy. You're the one that has the bags of gold. You're the one who's filthy rich. Can we just put that in perspective for a moment? That more than likely, there are 7.5 billion people who don't have it as well off in this world as we do. And this guy who had the one bag of gold, it wasn't that he was unhappy, he was just scared, he was frightened, he thought he'd lose it, so he dug a hole, put it in the ground, and the master says, I expected a lot more out of you. I didn't expect for you to throw away the money and mismanage it. I expected you to do something with it. Verse 19, here's what it says. So after a long time, the master of the servants returned, settled accounts. If you were to hear this story for the first time, this is where it gets tense. This is where Jesus starts to change it up on the perspective of what they thought he was going to say. Verse 20, the man who had received five bags of gold brought the other five. So he doubled his money. Master, he said, you've entrusted me. It's yours. You've entrusted me with your money, with five bags of gold. See, I've gained five more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. What does he say? You've been faithful with a few things. I've put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. And then he says the same thing, basically. Same reward, same response, nearly, to the guy who has two bags of gold and doubles his to four bags of gold. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. Now here's much more, and come share in your master's happiness. There's two things I want you to take away from the response of what we call the faithful servants in the story, the responsible servants in the story. Two things I want you to take. Number one is this. The master was rewarding their effort. That's why he was so happy with them. He was rewarding their effort because it takes effort to manage money, doesn't it? You realize this yet? It takes effort to be a wise investor. It takes effort to be someone who manages their money and has a budget so that their budget controls their spending. It takes effort to say no to your impulsive behaviors, doesn't it? It takes effort to say to your family, we're not going to be able to afford that vacation this year. We'll have to wait another year. We just don't have enough money for that now. It takes effort as a parent to say to your kid, we can't afford that luxury because that goes far beyond our living expenses. We can't do that right now. That takes effort. You know what doesn't take effort? Spend impulsively, frivolously, to the point where our credit cards are maxed out. That takes no effort whatsoever. But it takes effort to be a wise manager. It takes effort, doesn't it, to get yourself out of debt. That takes a ton of effort. You know what takes effort? To have God prick at your heart because you haven't been rich towards him, and now you're like, I want to give something to him consistently, but I know that means I'm going to have to give something up. It's going to be sacrificial. That takes some effort. It takes effort to be wise with the things that God's placed in your care, especially when it comes to money and financial discipline. Man, that's probably the hardest thing for so many people, and you must gain control of your money. Otherwise, the lack of control will start to control you, and money will be your master. And it takes effort to be responsible with what God has resourced to your care. And the two servants, they put in the effort. And God rewards them. Here's the second thing. The greatest reward wasn't the more bags of gold. The greatest reward was the deepening of the relationship with the master. Like this is probably never preached. You know, I've never preached on this side of the parable. This phrase that says, come and share in your master's happiness. Like what a great line for some servants. You're not outsiders anymore. You're insiders now. I can trust you. I welcome you in. I welcome you to this deeper relationship. Listen, some of you are far removed from God because when topics of money or resourcing come up, you all of a sudden say, it's mine, not yours, it's not God's, and it hurts the relationship. And you've allowed something as silly as money to destroy your faith or destroy a friendship or destroy a family rather than deepen yourself with the Lord and say, it's all yours, heart, soul, mind, strength, and wallet. And I'm not going to let any of that stuff get in the way of our relationship again. But what I find in Christian circles is this. Lord, you can have my life, you can have my heart, my soul, my strength, but you're not going to get my wallet. That's not going to be a part of the sacrifice that I bring to you. That's not going to be a way I honor you. And they have this defiant attitude that stands in defiance of God and his commands and how he says, I want to bring you a richer, deeper relationship. And can you imagine? You can have everything of me but one thing. Can you imagine a relationship of marriage starting that way? I'll give you everything but. And yet when it comes to our finances, so often we say, God, these are the things I'm going to hold back on. I know what you're saying, but I'm just not going to listen. And when we use our resources to honor God, it gets to the core of what worship is all about. And you know what worship is all about? It's about surrender. That's what worship is about. You ever wonder why people lift their hands to the Lord? It's about surrender. God, you have all of me. I surrender right here. I give up. I've got the victory in you, but I surrender. And what worship really is a surrendered heart. It's surrendering everything I have over to the Lord and saying, you are the master, and it's all been entrusted to my care, but I want to honor you with it. Friends, here's what I'm saying. Don't miss out on the deeper side of relationship that you can have with God because you're holding so tight to money, and you're not willing to be rich towards God and generous towards other people. The story continues on in verse 24. Then the man who had received one bag of gold came, and he says, Master, he said, I knew that you're a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid. He wasn't upset that the other guys had five. He wasn't upset the other one had two. He just says, I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you. Where does he place the blame? Where's the blame? Not on himself. The blame's not on his irresponsibility. The blame's not on his mismanagement. The blame's not on him just digging a hole, throwing away, frivolously going through the finances. No, his blame is squarely on the master. Can you imagine for a moment that you're going to blame the master who is so generous with you? He doesn't seem like a hard guy, does he? He gave one guy five bags, two bags. He gave you one bag. That doesn't seem like a hard guy. And yet the guy says, listen, your attitude towards money is so hard. And I just knew that if I didn't do something right with it, you'd come and you'd club me over the head. And he puts the blame on the master. You know what he's doing? He's not accepting blame. He's shucking his responsibility. And man, that's not just true what happens in the world, because that's happening in more of the world. That attitude is prevalent in our day and age. But it also happens in the life of the believer as well. But you hear it sometimes in the world. Like, when is the last time that you've heard someone say who has let go from their job under true right conditions, when they've ever said, well, you know what? I was late a lot. The boss is right. When have you ever heard say, well, it makes sense. I rarely complied with company policy. You never hear that one. Or how about this one? You know what? I had a good blessing and I just blew it. Now, you know what you typically hear? That company's greedy. That manager hated me. You know, I never was given any kind of grace. All they want is more money, and they worked me to death. Now, you know what? There might be some truth in that, but not always. Most of the time, we like to accept the least amount of responsibility for our failures, and that's what that one bag of gold guy was doing. But what he was doing is really what we do with God. Because I know there's folks that say, God, if you would have given me a different starting line, put me in a different family, maybe gave me that inheritance that my friend has, if you would have given me a decent paying job right out of the gate, then I would have been ahead in life. Maybe you could even say, God, if you didn't allow me to go through that health crisis, if you didn't allow me to go through that insurance nightmare I went through with the house or the car, then God, I wouldn't have all this debt that I have now. And I wouldn't be crippled by this debt. I'd be far ahead. Why'd you allow me to go through that? It's your fault. And look how the master responds to that one bag of gold guy who was irresponsible and tried to place blame on the master. He says, you wicked, lazy servant. Why lazy? Because it takes effort to manage resources. So you know that I harvest where I have not sown, and you gather, and I gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put your money on deposit with the bankers. You should have done at least something with this money, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. Now that doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound right until you understand God, that he's going to honor those who honor him. And he gives it to the guy with 10 because the guy with 10 had been trusted and he proved faithful. And he says, take that and give it to him because he's honored me and I will honor him. And this is where this story really takes a turn. Like it turns to a dark place, super dark, scary place all of a sudden. Like Jesus, boom, flips it on us. And you go, whoa, where did that come from? Because it goes to a place of accountability. It goes to a place of judgment. It goes to a place that sounds a lot like hell. And here's what he says as he concludes. He kicks the servant out of the household. And in verse 30 it says, and now throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Huh? That doesn't sound Jesus-like to me. I mean, Jesus-like would be like, okay, we signed him up for Financial Peace University for Dave Ramsey stuff, and we're going to cut up his credit cards. I mean, that's more Jesus-like. No, this is, you're kicked out of the household. I'm severing all ties with you. And it's going to be like hell on earth for you. And that wouldn't make sense until you get into the context of this whole chapter. Like look at verse 36. Jesus goes from a talk about money and giving it out, handing it out according to our abilities, and us having some responsibility and management over it, to the day of judgment. Well, we're all dead and we're all standing before God. And Jesus says it's going to be like a day where as simple as a shepherd knows the difference between a sheep and a goat. Sheep over here, goats over here, not hard to tell. Those who have accepted Jesus, sheep over here. Goats, those who have not, over here. One's bound for heaven, one's bound for a deadly, dangerous place called hell. And Jesus says to the sheep, like get in the context, look at it. Jesus says to the sheep in verse 35, what does he say? These are saved people. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to me. And they all say, when did we do that for you, Jesus? And he says, whenever you've done it for the least of these, you've done it unto me. And he looks at the way we handle our resources. Huh? I blessed you generously, and you got it. Okay, you had 2 bags of gold. You had 1 bag. You understood it. With what I entrusted to your care, you were generous. I gave you food. You didn't just use it to feed yourself. You fed others with it. I gave you some water. And you were so generous pouring out water to other people, even though you were thirsty. I gave you a home. And though it was a modest home, I know, you used it to the best of your ability to be hospitable to people. And you welcomed people in. I gave you clothes. And you gave the clothes right off of your back to others. I gave you health. What'd you do with your health? You went and you visited the sick. And you helped them when they couldn't help themselves. I gave you freedom. And in your freedom, you helped those who were entrapped and enslaved. You were generous with every resource I brought to your life. And then you can start to conclude that this isn't about money. Oh man, this story's not about money. You thought we were talking money? It's about everything. It's about everything. It's really about my heart and your heart and how we've surrendered it over to God and say, it's all yours, everything, and I will be rich towards you and I will be generous towards others. That's the greatest investment you can make. Not dig a hole and throw it away, but to be rich towards God and generous to others. You see, putting the money to work just isn't great at financial advice. It's great faith advice. Jesus teaching, store it for yourselves, treasures where? In heaven. How do you do that? By being rich towards God and generous to people. I wrote this to kind of a declaration, and I don't know, you can take a picture of it, request it later. I don't expect you to make this pledge with me. I think that's unfair. I like to read the contract before I sign it, you know? But this is money. With eternity in mind, I will manage it as a faithful steward of God. I've allowed it to control me for far too long. And God's desire is to bless me with it, but my mismanagement of it has at times made it a curse. God has entrusted me to handle a portion of his wealth, and instead of being envious and jealous about the things I don't have, I will learn to live on what I do have. This is money. I will refuse to allow my pursuit of it and the desire for more of it to get in the way of my faith and my family and my friendships. I will honor God with the first fruits of my wealth. I will be generous on every occasion, and I will give as God guides me to give. For this money is not mine. I'm just a trustworthy manager of it. Do you think you could make that pledge one day? Will you pray with me? God, I pray that we get the right understanding of this. That we really see the blessings that are in our life. All these things you've poured into our lap. And we are so grateful that you honor us with it and trust it to our care. And may we just be faithful and wise with it. And there are times, I know, when we want more of it. But Father, maybe we can be content in every situation and generous on all occasions and rich toward you. Father, may we walk out of here wise. May we walk out of here discerning on how to manage your resources better. But Father, may we put you as the master of our life. Heart, soul, mind, strength, and money. We praise you and we thank you for giving us the greatest riches you could have possibly given to us, your son. That you gave to us what we could not get for ourselves. Forgiveness and grace and salvation, a righteous relationship with you. May we pursue you. And we praise you for Jesus. And we pray these things in his name.